Oil Can Henry's corporate slogan. We don't want to change the world. We just want to change your oil. We're not trying to change behavior. We're just trying to pay for the streets. And I think the last time around, as Mark Lear alluded to earlier, the council and the community got pretty tangled up in the social engineering of the measure versus just paying for the streets. So this was a simplicity decision to construct it this way, which also has community and political implications, that we're not carrying out a program of social change here. We're just paying for the streets. And you can play that either way, but it didn't work out well the last time, in part because of those mode wars, as Mark described them.
Yeah, it makes sense. Ironically, though, we are maybe at risk of going so far the other way, of decoupling the charge from any recommended behavior and the impact.
Great. I just want to respond really quickly to Commissioner Novick's comments about the gas tax. You make the argument that vehicle drivers are already paying a lot into the system because of the vehicle because of the gas tax. But, you know, earlier today you were talking about how it was declining and we need to find another way to recapture that revenue. How would charging people to operate a vehicle in Portland, a yearly fee, would that not make up for the declining gas tax revenue?
I don't know how Chicago's system works, actually. And it might be worth finding that out.
We
but
have
still,
I didn't see
that Lee was still here.
You're an expert witness in the room.
Sure. Lee, actually, do you, colleagues, would you mind? Okay, maybe we're too late in the day.
We might need to let people testify. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's a good discussion.
We appreciate your
thank
testimony.
Thank you. Yeah, you raised some good issues.
If you have other suggestions, is it in your testimony, you said?
I didn't provide written testimony, but I'd be happy to stick around and talk to you afterwards.
Yeah,
mind the next day or so sending us an email?
I can do that.
Just with the suggested, with the ideas. You don't have to do the background piece, but
sure.
That'd be helpful. Ideas. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Yes, thank you all.
Very
helpful. Okay. Yeah, that's right. Extra credit for creativity. Okay, let's see who's. You might just be able to take a hand count here and see where they show up on your list.
Who's left to testify?
Who's left to speak?
One, two, three.
Why don't you all come up?
Yeah, why don't you just. The first three closest by, come on up and just give us your name. We can dispense with the list, I think, at this point. The other three, just stand by, and we'll get you next.
All right. Yeah, long evening / afternoon. I'm Murray Kudish. I'm president of the Northeast Broadway Business Association and represent 300-plus businesses who'd see a significant new expense due to the transportation user fee. Obviously, as you've heard from many small businesses and folks representing other district, a bill to businesses in the mid-hundreds to thousands of dollars a year would be extremely damaging to them. In addition, the planning around this proposal has been rushed. The rate-setting methodology for the fees is flawed in the current system. And real discussion of alternatives to overcharging businesses hasn't quite happened. I also want to note that the overall business community was not polled on this or brought into the discussions until months after the public outreach began, mostly in neighborhoods. We're asking that you vote no on the current version of the fee and then regroup to find a way to reduce the cost for business. Any new proposal should then be referred to a full vote by Portland citizens and not simply put in to a place by council. I'm going to go into a couple of things. I spent a couple way into the evening playing around and looking at some of the data on the transportation site, and I've also spoken to some of the folks at PBOT who've been putting it together and have been to a couple of the meetings that you've had. The overall payment of the fee may be split 50-50, but the tax burden on businesses is much higher than for residents if you look at the rate. At $11.56 a month, the old thing we were talking about, the burden on business, on freestanding households is 0.25% of Portland's average taxable income in 2012. If using a sample of business net income, a taxable income, the business fee equals a 2-6% tax rate in comparison, which is 800-2,000% more. Why should businesses pay so much more than residents?
Sir?
Yeah.
Are you saying net business income?
net comparable net taxable income for residents, net taxable income for a business.
But don't businesses get to deduct most of their expenses for taxable income for, like, income tax purposes?
As do residents. Yeah,
actually,
net,
no.
That's after deductions for net taxable income.
Okay, but residents don't get to deduct, for example, all of the cost of their homes. They just get to deduct the home mortgage interest. They don't get to deduct the cost of food. It's my understanding that for an income tax, businesses get to deduct pretty much the cost of wages, the cost of facilities, all that stuff.
And you're ending up with, right, but it's end up what you're taking home at the end of the day after all the expenses, especially for a small business in Portland. It's a small figure, which I think you've heard from people today.
But I just want to clarify.
Yeah, I get
that,
where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Right. It's just, it's, I'm trying to go apples to apples here as closely as possible. Bottom line is, it was less than $140 a year for residents, where we're looking at $800, $900 for businesses, up into the thousands per year, on not a dissimilar amount of net taxable income for a very small business versus the average in taxable income in Portland. Also, the generic ITE national categories that are being used to set fees clearly, as you've heard, don't work in Portland, where we've got so many small businesses not generating anywhere near 5,000 trips a month. In addition, the ITE trip categories that we're missing, I mean, there's only 30 or so up on the calculator. There's a bunch missing. It's confusing. Obviously, it needs to be simplified. I mean, I went by looking for typical businesses in my district. Coffee shops, pet stores, dry cleaners, barbershop, bakery, small bookstore, none of them are in there. It needs to be streamlined. And what we could be looking at is having thousands of Portland businesses, depending on an appeal to PBOT, to set their rate properly would be just be a disaster unless we can find a way to properly get this figured out up front. Also, wildly different variation in costs. This is pretty interesting, depending on who receives the bill. Because you have to depend on the water bill to do it, you're going to end up with totally different fees based on whether it goes to somebody on their own meter versus a building where the landlord gets the bill for multiple businesses. So I took an example of a 1,500-square-foot apparel store in a 9,000-square-foot building. If the store is billed directly on their own meter and categorized as an apparel store, it's $1,446 a year. If it's billed via the landlord, still categorized as an apparel store, it drops to $984 a year. Then I was told, how do you classify these buildings in Portland with multiple businesses, like we have four, five, six building, you know, businesses in the building? They said, well, there's a specialty retail center slash mini strip mall that you would use. And I said, well, isn't that more like for the suburbs where you've got little strip malls like in California where you pull up and you have parking? We don't have that here. They said, but that's the closest thing. Well, that would be $745 a year. So that's 50% of what the individual same business, same square footage would pay, but because they're on their own meter, they're paying double. Then, suppose the predominant use of the building is a restaurant at a much higher trip rate, much. I mean, we're talking two, three, four times a month in fees, but the entire building would then be classified by predominant use according to the legislation that I read. You'd be looking at $1,240 a year. So there's this crazy, different, wild variation that's totally unfair for businesses, and it's going to lead to a lack of equity from business to business. Who could be across the street from each other? It's confusing, and clearly that needs to be dealt with. Obviously, there's no system in place to bill this. I mean, a big reason this is that way, my understanding is, you have, the only way to bill people monthly is the water billing system.
Not the only way, but it's one.
It
would take all this money to do it. I mean, the suggestion would be each business should be billed individually for their type of business and their type of square footage, but we're having to get into it via the water bill and who pays the water bill, because that's the process cross-reference with the tax database and the business license database. Clearly, it needs to go back to the drawing board. And the folks I've talked to at PBOT, they're really trying hard to make this work, and I certainly appreciate their time. But it's clear this puppy isn't ready for prime time yet, and we definitely need to step back and find a way, you know, to reduce it. And I'll just finish by saying, you know, as you've heard, the economy's flat, the costs keep going up for small business, and this is on top of all these things. And, you know, when I went out to members in my district, I said, what's going to happen? They said, well, we're going to have to cut employee hours, reduce benefits, increase prices, and there's definitely people who will have to close. They're barely hanging on. You know, the city of Portland likes to brag about how small business forms such a crucial part of our economic base, and you proclaim Small Business Week a few weeks ago, and our reputation is built on our vibrant neighborhoods and business districts that are prime examples of urban livability that makes Portland oh so Portland. You know, we all agree that well-maintained roads and sidewalks, crosswalks, signals are very critical, and the deteriorating transportation system clearly needs help, but bleeding our business community dry to make up for past mistakes by the city isn't the answer. Do we really want to damage the economic fabric of the city and the very people who make Portland unique? I don't think so.
Thanks,
Thank
Murray.
You.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
What he said. My name is Amy Estrin, and I have a business here in Portland, and I'm going on my 23rd year. And in all that time, I've never let go a staff member, even as our economy in this last several years has been really tough. What we've done is, myself and my husband, who own the business, we've reduced our wages as much as we've needed to in order to keep everyone on staff. When I heard about this and read about the size of that things were going to be based on the size of the building, it kept me up at night because I have a business that requires a large space. We are inventory heavy. So we're about 4,500 square feet. And besides that, we have parking for both the staff and for customers. If I get a dozen people in the store a day, I'm grateful. It takes sometimes months of working with somebody for us to be able to sell them what they need from our business. And so the balance of what I would pay when I try to look up
the
system,
right?
Thank you,
yeah.
Was frightening to me. I just hired someone because we started doing just a titch better. And I'm trying to relieve my as people have left because of the economy, or if someone naturally was leaving the job, I didn't fill the job because we're trying to stretch these very thin dollars. But in this case, I just hired someone before I found out about this, and I don't know what this will mean to that person's job, to how all this is going to work. It's frightening. I don't believe the city owes me a living. This was my decision as a small business person to take this risk. I put my house up against my business to support and build this business. This is my risk. But I don't understand fundamentally why my business gets, why I get this fee so much disproportionate to me than you do living in your house, having your job that you have. I don't understand it. Whether or not I get paid after all my staff get paid, all my bills get paid, this thing you said about gets taken off your taxes, it still has to be paid. Money still has to be there to pay this. So after everything gets paid, what's left over is my living, which I'm pretty positive is less than many people that you might think. You think people who have a business are loaded. Believe me, it's not true. It's the joke of small business. I wish that I had the money that people think I have when they come in my business. I work harder now than I ever have. My ideal was to work less as I got older. I'm working longer hours. And I'm doing more than I can do to keep my staff employed. But I don't understand why the logic in Portland is always to turn to small business for the larger chunk of things. As a citizen, I absolutely want to pay my fair share. But there's nothing fair about this. And I don't understand the concept of it.
Thank you. Thanks. Good evening.
Good evening. I'm Richard Royce. I'm retired. I would like to see you enact it so the people who are on welfare and on low income don't pay anything. They can't afford it. They have a system now in the tax, in the courts, where they're sitting there and they're throwing people in jail because they can't pay the court fees after they've been convicted, so they put them in jail. We don't need to pay poor people and make them pay money. I'd like to see people over 70 not have to pay anything next year for me. As far as charging people outside of the city limits, take a look at Denver. They do it. It's an employment fee. If you work in the city, you have to pay the taxes for the city. It's a set fee. And they do it quite regularly and quite easily. And it's everybody who does not live in the city. That will lower the tax burden on the people who live in the city. I like the fee where it's on the number of cars you have, or a small fee. That works very well for me. But I had problems digging up the $25 to pay for this stupid art tax. It just occurred at the wrong time of the year. So it's tough. I'd like to see the things with a limited life, okay? You say you need it for 10 years, I'll give you 12. But I want to see it. If they need it more than 12, let them come back in and reenact it again and get the input again. By then, they should be able to find all the flaws in it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, I think we have a few more folks. Come on up. Just volunteer. Thank you for waiting.
To the end. Thanks for hanging in there for us.
Okay, who would ever like to start, please?
I'll start. I'm Brandy Pace, Portland, Oregon resident for 35 years. Last month, I called PGE and had the extra fee for Blue Sky usage removed. It added $8 to our monthly budget. I called my car insurance company to see if we could squeeze in one more discount. That added $12 more a month. My husband's replacement work boots came from Goodwill. The paint on my house is peeling, my gutters are leaking, and my husband and I shiver through the winters with an old oil furnace converted from a sawdust burner. Our household paid the $70 arts tax. It had to come out of our grocery budget. So it was beans and rice until the next payday. My monthly mortgage payment is now almost even with my monthly Portland property tax. $80 million to repair the Selwood Bridge, underutilized streetcars, and more speed bumps than I can count. I don't pretend to understand the workings of your transportation decisions, but I do understand what it takes to maintain my budget. A $12 monthly bill does not look the same to a person making $25,000 a year as it does to a person making $100,000 a year. Studies show that people who will be the most impacted by a fee of this sort are the least likely to come to a meeting such as this. So for them, let me say, I am the face of Portlanders stretched to the limit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming and for staying and for making that statement. It's very important.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening.
Hi, that was moving and hard to follow. My name is Ann Sanderson. I'm a resident, I'm a small business owner, and I'm a co-creator of the Stop Portland Street Fee Facebook page. And I'm also the president of the Woodstock Community Business Association, and while we oppose the tax, I'm not speaking for them today, I'm speaking for me and for the people who have contacted us looking for a voice. And for the people who couldn't stay the 5.5 hours to speak today because they had to pick up their kids and feed them dinner. Nobody's going to defend the deplorable state of our pavements or the lack of the good sidewalks or crosswalks. We all agree that safety is a priority. But dividing the issues between residential and businesses are not going to make this better government. And half a bad plan is still a bad plan. Portland has a strong tradition of citizens making decisions through the voting process. Not too long ago, we voted on the art tax and fluoride. You win some and you lose some. But I trust the people to decide, and I wish you did too. Large lobbies can only bring the issue to the ballot. The people are still the ones who vote. By saying that you won't challenge big interests, and you're saying that you will take the path of least resistance, which in this case results in imposing a regressive tax on those who lack the power to oppose it. I expect better from you. I expect that when you say you know it's a regressive tax, it is not followed exactly with the words, but it is the least unpopular. And as an aside, I think you've successfully made this the most unpopular option. Most importantly, I expect you to trust us. We, the people, collectively are capable, knowledgeable, and interested. We can help you govern in a respectful way. On behalf of myself and the people of Portland who are making their voices heard, we've heard you, and we vote.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Cheryl Mays. I happen to be watching news. That's the only way I knew this meeting was going on. And I guess it was meant for you to be here late, because at least it's not over. So I'm glad, and, you know, that I'm able to at least voice my, you know, opinion or what have you. First of all, I'm a native Oregonian, retired with a disability, on fixed income, and I'm speaking and representing myself and a lot of the elders and seniors that don't have a voice in this. When you say fees, not taxes, my right to voting is omitted. Why? You know, as I've been to forums and what have you in the past, and there was questions that was asked about, is Portland friendly to elders and senior citizens? As a senior, hoping one day that I would become or have the luxury of being an elder, it's very unfriendly. After working all my life, paying taxes, you know, what have you, I'm trying to own my home. I live in North Portland, grew up in the Irvington area, and the thing is that being priced out with everything increasing, I'm going to move it faster, because the thing is that, you know, even with the art tax, as you mentioned, that was something, and I'll let you know, I didn't pay it because I didn't have anything to pay it with. I also owe a student loan from after being in academia for 10 years. So the thing is that where is there to stretch? And to my, you know, knowledge of growing up and being taught about working, you know, having a job, retiring, whatever, that, you know, retirement was not even in the vocabulary. Schools closing, there's neighborhoods, which I've watched the regentrification or gentrification, whichever way you want to describe that, in the inner city. It hasn't gotten better. In fact, it's gotten worse. I know about urban renewal, the sprawl. That's what's happening. And I think it's unfair when taxes or fees, whichever, is placed upon people that have worked all their lives. A lot of the people that came up were talking about businesses. I had families that had businesses. I even had a self-home business. But the thing, too, I had to figure out other ways to get in. Also, too, I was here on Recognition Day for the AARP Volunteer Grandparent Program. Now, that little bit of money, it's not the purpose. The thing is that trying to reach back and help the shortfall in trying to educate our kids one way or another. My kids are grown. I have grandkids, and I have great-grandkids. But I can't give up. But at the same time, you know, trying to do something. And we're talking about another tax, cutting corners. And I've come from the professional world. In fact, I retired from the Federal Reserve Bank. So when you're talking about small businesses, making Oregon, I wonder now, because as I look around, especially in inner city and in the neighborhood that I live in today, it's a job just trying to maintain and exist. There's a lot of more issues at need, but I just wanted to voice, and like I said, thank you for hearing me.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Are there some others still that want to speak? Gone. Thank you for being here. So we're going to conclude the hearing. This rolls to second reading. The resolution goes forward with it. It doesn't have to be acted on tonight, of course, even though it's
a resolution. Mayor, I know it's late, but I have about 500 questions and some procedural things I want to put on the record. So can we get the team back up?
All right.
Because I'd like to know where we're actually going from here.
I'm not sure if we knew that tonight, but go ahead.
So, Leah, procedurally, I mean, I started this morning by getting a copy of the substitute, and we've now gone 5.5 hours of testimony. And I've got about 5 single-page questions and concerns. So we're not going to stay here, obviously, much longer. But procedurally, where are we going with this?
Commissioner, where we're going is we have the resolution that says that we will, by November 14th, pass a non-residential portion, or the residential portion is repealed. We would have next week a vote on the residential street fee and on that resolution committing to have a vote on a non-residential one. And we have next a vote on the mayor's proposed charter amendment, which I support, which would dedicate any money raised by this fee to transportation and primarily to maintenance and safety.
Steve, as we sift through 5.5 hours of testimony, if any of us choose to have an amendment we want to offer or clarification or something, what's the procedure?
Any kind of clarification that you would like?
Say an amendment.
An amendment. I would refer you to my commissioner for that.
I think that in order to have a second reading next week, it would have to be acted upon now. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. Well, I've made no secret of the fact that I'm going to vote to refer this to the voters, but even with the arts tax, we spent actually a fair amount of time making sure that what we referred had the consensus of the council. And I'm not even remotely prepared now to offer amendments or to address the concerns that I have because I haven't even digested them, and I haven't even had the chance to read the substitute that was handed to me before this hearing began. So I don't control the process here. But if what we're saying is we are not going to have a substantive discussion about any of the testimony tonight and the opportunity to potentially refine what's before us, I think we should make that clear. Because if we're going to a second meeting tomorrow.
I think we all need to consider the testimony that we've heard tonight.
Well, but Charlie, what I've just been told is we're going to a second reading next week. So to consider for what purpose?
To decide how to vote.
Well, but we actually have two functions as legislators. One is to make sure that what we vote on is the best possible legislation, and two, then to cast a substantive vote. So if Commissioner Fritz or me or Dan or anyone else thinks this can be improved, what is the mechanism for us to do that?
It's an ordinance, so it's enacted and can be amended later.
The commissioner, this does not go into effect. We do not actually start sending people bills until next July. So if there is a minor modification which you wish to propose, then you can propose that between now and then. I think that we did something similar with the paid sick leave ordinance, that we did do some cleanup after initial adoption.
Okay. Well, I feel like I've been trying to absorb 5.5 hours of testimony.
So have we all. But
right.
This is an ordinance that has an effective date of July 1 of 2015.
Oh, there's an easy solution to that. Let's bundle the two matters and take them up in November together.
Well, Commissioner, I think that we have made clear for some time that it was our intent to conclude voting on this proposal in time that if somebody did gather signatures and it was referred, it would appear on the November 2014 ballot as opposed to on a low turnout ballot. That is still our intention. we concluded that the business side, the non-residential side, was sufficiently complex that it required additional discussion. But we have been talking very openly for the past several months about an $8 to $12 residential, a month residential fee with a potential low-income discount. We've been talking about that very openly, and that is a fairly straightforward proposal.
Steve, I appreciate your view of it, and you're entitled to it. Then why do we have a 5.5-hour hearing?
Because it's an ordinance, and we have to have a hearing. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm sleep-deprived here, but what's your
question? We normally take testimony for the purpose of considering what's before us, and then we take the time to see if we improve what's before us.
Well, we've already got amendments that have been proposed.
Before taking any testimony.
You have other amendments that you want to propose now?
I have about 5 pages of questions and follow-up and issues that I'd like to have some answers on.
Often what we do in situations like this, since it does go to second reading, is to try to get questions and conflicts resolved. I appreciate your concern, Commissioner Fish, because it has been an excellent hearing, 5.5 hours of exceptionally on-target testimony. I have to also say that the hundreds of emails that I've read already have been without parallel the most informative sets of emails that I have read on any subject in the 6 years that I've been here. There have been no form letters of, you know, spamming my in mailbox with the same thing 50 times. It's all been completely on target, and frankly, I have another 500 that have built up since the three-day weekend that I have still to read. So I think that there is some more work to be done between now and next week, and I don't know how that will work out. I want to just read something that I wanted to read into the record from somebody who couldn't be here, Bill Barnes, and he wrote it on a different issue, but it's very pertinent. And he said, "We can get out of this, but time is working against us. It's like our streets. We've let things go for so long, trying to keep everybody happy, that we've lost control of our own future. Honesty, responsibility, accountability, they all matter." And I think what I've heard here tonight is a shared awareness that our streets are in bad shape, and for the most part, people are understanding that we don't have enough money to fix them. We did hear some people who still think that if we just manage the money that we have better, we would have enough. $91 million is a lot of money. And when you look at the $410 million general fund budget, there is no way that we are going to find $91 million for transportation anytime in the near future. So I'm very concerned about not only the business side, which I think was an elegant proposal to consider splitting them off. We've heard some significant testimony today about the residential side, that even with the proposal for starting it at $6 per month, as was just mentioned, for some people $6 is a lot of money. So I think we all have some thinking to do about the best way forward.
Well, and I'm open to a creative way of resolving this, and I don't have the vote to stop us from taking a vote next week, but let me give you just a concrete example, and you can tell me how procedurally we address it. The affordable housing community, and particularly Home Forward, came forward with a specific set of concerns around Section 8, BASH, and Straw. Big ticket items, significant number of people impacted. I have no way to evaluate the problem, potential solutions, whether they should be in or out. Commissioner Novick, you talk from time to time about some legal advice about treating classes of people differently. That makes sense to me. If we don't resolve some of those questions between now and next Wednesday, what's the when do we resolve them?
Anytime between now and next July.
So but Charlie, we were therefore adopting something that potentially has a flaw in it about its application.
No one's going to get billed for this before July 1, 2015.
Yeah, but
Commissioner,
I'm missing something because this is not how we normally.
There's part of this that we have to refer to the voters, and there's a timeline for that.
Which part is that?
The charter amendment
has to be referred to the voters. Right?
That doesn't have to be referred till July.
That has to be referred, and there's part of this that isn't being referred in its current construction, and that the council's free to change at a future date.
So the timing for next week is driven by the timing of the referral of your charter amendment?
In part by the need, as Commissioner Novick said, there's been a concern about this being undemocratic. You know, I'm very happy about the results of the last election, but only 30% of our voters voted. And the one time when more of our voters vote is in a November general election. So if this is going to get referred to the voters, then in fairness, the time that that ought to be done is at a November general election.
And what people will hear in a November general election is that this is going to be a fee that single family residences will pay $6 in the first year and $9 in the second year and $12 in the third year, and that there will be a low income discount and the people in multifamily housing will pay less because of the trip generation formula. That does not preclude subsequent action to address some of the concerns that we've heard here today, but it would give people a chance to vote on a basic premise and for the vast majority of Portlanders to know exactly what's going to happen.
That's a helpful explanation. It's an unusual procedural posture to put a body that is also a legislative body in terms of refining work. This is the first time in 6 years that I've gone through an exercise like this, but
well, Commissioner, I will also add that we have had a number of town halls about this issue around town over the last few months. So a number of Portlanders have had a chance to weigh in, although this might be the first hearing in this room, but it's not the first public discussion of these issues.
Well, that's true, but it's the first time some of your colleagues as legislators have had the benefit of public testimony.
But two of my colleagues announced in advance that they were going to vote no unless this was sent to the voters.
In fairness, there's two issues that I have to grapple with. One is the substance of whatever we're crafting, and then two, philosophically, I think it should be referred to the voters. But I'm not going to vote to refer to the voters something that I don't think is properly crafted. So I didn't refer the arts tax because I thought the arts tax was a bad idea. I referred the arts tax because I was given the option by the team that crafted it to either adopt it or refer it, and I joined with the majority of the council saying it should be referred. But I referred it saying I hope it passes. So there's two exercises I have to go through. One is this legislation, which I as a legislator have an obligation to shape to make the best possible, is it fair? Is it balanced? Is it well written? Does it apply to the circumstances? Does it address concerns the public has raised? And two, philosophically, I've said, yes, I think we should refer it. That's a separate issue. I have to go through a two-part test. And I'm asking these questions because it's 7:30 and I can't possibly absorb all the information. I haven't received half the emails that people referred to was in the record. And there may be some tweaks that I or another member of this body want to offer. If the answer is we're going to go to a vote next week and there won't be the opportunity to do that, but there would be a chance at some future time, then I have to assess personally whether that's a sufficient guarantee that I get a way to shape this thing at some future time. I think it's a fair point. I'm not objecting to that procedure, but I don't know that we've ever actually followed that procedure before in my 6 years, so I just want to contemplate that. I don't control the vote on this, so my concern can be discarded. But I also want to honor the fact that for 5.5 hours we've listened to people raise concerns about the structure of this, alternatives, about the impact on certain vulnerable communities, about ways of making it more progressive or lessening the burden. And I frankly, at 7:30, after 2 days of the kinds of hearings we've gone through, I don't have the capacity to evaluate those.
And again, I want to honor both the good ideas that we've heard from people and your interest in making sure that we shape an effective proposal. But I think, as Commissioner Novick just articulated, the basic framework of this is simple enough that we ought to make a decision about whether we want to enact it or not. And I believe we should. And that's a decision that we can make, even if we know later we're going to make technical or policy corrections to this construct.
Sure, that may be. I will say that we have actually, as a council, spent more time deliberating in public forums over a proposed 4.9% increase in our existing utility charge than we have for creating a fee of this magnitude. I'm not saying this to be critical.
We've spent 14 years, as I said earlier, talking about just this idea, just the idea of a street utility fee. And it's been fits and starts. Granted, it hasn't been continuous for 14 years.
We have been
talking about this for 14 years.
Yeah, I'm not actually not being critical of my colleague. Every time I've been asked, I have complimented the mayor and the commissioner in charge for leading the conversation. So don't misunderstand that. There is a problem. You have put a solution on the table. What I am trying to balance is that we have gone through a public process, and I'm trying to understand what is the value of that public process if we don't absorb the information and consider changes to this if we think it improves it. And the answer is that we can do that at some future date. And that's a fair answer, but I need to consider that because that's not what I would call regular order.
As we did with sick leave and with the arts tax, there have been occasions when the council needs to modify a policy or a revenue mechanism that's already in place. And we have that opportunity as a council to do that. And in fact, particularly in this case, there will be no harm done by, or there will be no impact, harm or good, of a modification of this plan in October or February because it isn't charged to anyone until July of 2015. So it's all prospective. No matter what our procedural machinations in this room, it's all prospective. And the very division of this idea into we're going to take up the business piece a little later because there are all these complexities, a lot of which got better articulated in this room by folks who came in and spoke today. And I'm more interested in that discussion than I was before because I've heard some very significant critiques of the ITE manual, and I think, you know, we have some opportunities, I hope, to continue to do a better job with that.
But, you know, interesting, Charlie, as I listen to the concerns about the bifurcation, I actually came to the other conclusion, which was I was persuaded, at least on the basis of the testimony we had tonight, that we might benefit from taking them up together and balancing and consider how they interact and considering the equities as to both at the same time. We heard almost uniformly from people saying they had heartburn around the bifurcation simply because you could have an inconsistent process. And my reaction was we might benefit from taking them up together to make sure it's a balanced and equitable process. And something we learn from the business consideration might inform what we do in the residential. So it cuts both ways. I'm not at 7:30 trying to pick a fight on a minor procedural point. I've actually been listening very carefully to testimony and have a number of questions. What I think I'll do is forward my questions tomorrow. And then if they rise to the level of a major modification, discuss it with my colleagues in the respectful way that we've had this process so far. But this is a somewhat unusual process, and I understand the timing dynamics. But I also want to be faithful to this public process we've gone through and make sure that whatever we're crafting is the best possible legislation it can be. And I don't have the bandwidth right now to sift through everything I've heard. And
I
plus, I didn't apparently get half the emails, so I'd like to have the chance to see those as well.
All right. Commissioner Novick or Commissioner Fritz, any other closing comments on your part? Then, go ahead, Steve. I'm sorry.
I very, very much appreciate all the testimony we've heard tonight, and I very, very much appreciate all the hard work that PBOT staff has put in. Leah, Mark, Dylan, Ken Lee, Jamie, and actually, I think I might have to say especially Jamie, because she has been tasked with a huge percentage of this work, and I'm amazed that she is still upright. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.
Nice job. Thank you.
536 goes to second reading, and 537 is set over to accompany it. Thanks. And we are adjourned for the week.
Thank you.
Before my voice goes out. All right. Thank you. All right.